Hello, welcome to Psychopath in Your Life. This is episode number 40. I'm your host, Diane Emerson. I'm the author of the book, Psychopaths in Our Lives, My Interviews, which is now available on Amazon and iBooks and several other places. But Amazon is the only location that does have the paperback version. Anyway, today I'd like to continue our chat, Love and Psychopaths. And so this will be part 7. And that begins with episode number 33. So any links and contact information is at the bottom of the podcast for your, so you can know how to get a hold of me. Thank you for your emails and any links for any other places where the podcast might play that might interest you. So last week we've been chatting more about the emotional vacancy and how psychopaths feel about relationships, the honesty lying part. And it really is hard to comprehend the pain when you get to the point something is telling you the person you love is a psychopath. I imagine the first reaction is to reject that voice that told you it was true. So let me give you a quote of what a psychopath would have to say about their idea of any kind of forgiveness. And it said, "I would take great pleasure in watching a couple of people crumble into ruin. And if I was given the opportunity, I'm not sure I'd be able to resist getting a few kicks in to help them on their way." So then I had a lot of questions that I wanted answers to, obviously. And one of the ones that I was always wondering about, because victims had talked about this over the years, and a further question I had were, are there some things that partners tell you that stand out? And also, for example, do either you or they claim to be soulmates? And the reason I had that soulmate question, and I'll get back to that more later, because it's a very ongoing word that you'll find happening in these stories with the victims. So let's see what he had to say about what his girlfriend or ex-partner or whatever might tell about it that might stand out. What my girlfriend would think? Not a lot, I would imagine. No idea. She'd probably write all sorts of nasty stuff under the guise of having tried to understand and help me. She was an eternal victim, no matter what happened. After a while, the inclination is to assume that's because she wants to be, and to meet that need in her. I do not know what she would write, nor do I care. She was a terminally broken mess, and frankly, I think she enjoys the attention too much to ever stop. People use me to try to make themselves whole. This usually lasts up to the stage where they feel they really want to get to know the real me, who often by this point has kind of let them down, but also intrigued them in many ways. But then nobody's perfect. So I imagine I'm by no means unusual in this regard. This relationship has been pumped up to such mythological, fascinating levels that it becomes a life goal for them to find out even more about me. I've understood them like no one else ever has, after all, so quickly, so effortlessly. It's no wonder they're often the same types interested in other types of con. They want magical solutions and are easy to cold read. For me, it's me. The idea of me. Their idea of me. I have lost count of the number of times I have heard, "I've given up on ever finding the one." I tend to laugh and tell them that was wise. That always gets a good response, for some reason. Who is manipulating who here? I just told the truth. But think about it. Why would anyone ever say that? It is clearly a disarming remark. But in a context where disarming remarks are supposedly not needed. Nobody tells somebody they distrust that they think they're the one, the embodiment of their hopes and dreams. So what is it doing in the conversation? Maybe you can add that to your red flags list, if you like. Apparently, charming, witty, trust-winning behavior, that is out of place. Although good luck noticing them at the time. Whatever the reason, I can see very easily when someone has the invisible scars that life's worst events leave on the mind. What I find strangest of all is I rarely, if ever, have to broach whatever topic it is. People seem eager to tell me. to unburden themselves, and that is fine. After all, what else am I doing here? Yeah, that was kind of this thing about the listener has come up, and it's actually a very key point. And like we talked many podcasts ago, listening is necessary because, like they say, if I needed to find the keys to your safe, listening is how I'm going to find out the code. So listening is a honed skill that they know works for them. But I also see it more as a data collecting phase. And so that's when they bring themselves into play by starting to speak about being portrayed as the victims. But, you know, these are just my observations. But anyway, so playing the role of the victim, or whatever is the term, will actually bring out the mothering to let me fix this guy or gal. Also, wouldn't playing the victim set the stage if the conquest finds out something terrible about your past? If you beat them to the punch about how horrible it was for you for this to happen. Essentially, you could take no responsibility but bring out the protective side of the person in the net, right? And this person in the net is the one that that we were referring to as the victim wanting to mother and let me fix this guy or gal. And so the answer was quite interesting. It says, I suppose I play the victim in the persona of a misunderstood outcast. People want to bring me into the fold. They want to understand me, to help me understand myself, so I can find peace. That's what makes me so attractive to certain kinds of people. They're usually on the road to some sort of recovery themselves and can't bear to see someone left behind, alone, suffering. Still in the denial phase, while I'm telling myself, it's all okay. Where they were in the past, where they think they're going away from, and what better way to show their new strength than by offering it without question? If women love mystery, I'm full of that, or rather devoid of answers, which I suppose must look the same from a distance. They love a rogue. The fact that they've gone on to tell me, that should tell you this wasn't enough to stop them, on to open up to me, only with a true eyebrow-raising level of trust. From my perspective, I would say that I just do not quit when the going gets rough and will do whatever I can to save a relationship. If it is, then obviously not one that can be saved. I will give the other person the power to be the one who leaves. Aren't these good qualities? That's an honest question. Although I will admit that them leaving thing has other various benefits that will probably make it worth doing anyway. Maybe I just mean, I want to make you happy, differently to how others mean it. More literally, I will make you happy. More intelligent, less scared, more stable, better equipped, and more self-aware than you would be otherwise. Because I'm helping strip away all that crap and dead wood that's holding you back. I think reading that back, I shall stop short of claiming to teach modesty. Okay, so we'll continue on here. And here's a good example that comes to my mind. Perhaps we have just met and are lying in bed. There's something you want to talk about. You hope I understand and do not take offense. But you've been hurt before. Be honest. Can you trust me? I look at you seriously and say, of course you can. You already do. Then I laugh, you hit me, Ed asks me, but no, seriously. I try to look honestly thoughtful for a moment and tell you that trust is not something you should allow others to allocate for you. It is much too much power to give others over yourself. I just told you the truth. You turned it into a lie and later shall blame me for it. I highlighted the fact that you just were asking was just a little bit too late. I told you never to allow others to decide whether you trust them or not. I pointed out that you should be careful how you word things if they matter to you. People lie to themselves, and then they demand I wear a yellow armband or have doesn't painstakingly readjust the neurosis of every woman he meets before allowing them to be attracted to him branded on my face. Nothing is guaranteed in life. She could be squashed by a rock from space at any moment, or suffer a stroke or embolism, or a million other things that could kill or cripple her, does she let those things stop her from living? Is her home devoid of electrical appliances in case one malfunctions and starts a fire? Or does she just try not to get the toaster in the sink when she's washing up? So, continuing on next week with Love and the Psychopath, thanks for joining me, and I will look forward to chatting with you next week. Goodbye for now, and be safe out there.